and unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with even in 100,000 million kalpas. Having it to see and listen to remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
So what, is this the fourth day? It feels like longer and shorter, both at the same time. If you count Saturday, Sunday, but yeah, it's the fourth day if you don't count Friday. And yet it seems right in the middle, and possibly over the hump for sitting pain. Is that accurate or no? Okay, it's getting a little better, I hope. I've really liked seeing all of you sitting, you know, from the back, walking around and just looking out and seeing everyone just upright and really nice posture, very attentive, and yet not uptight, you know, posture, just relaxed. And I've enjoyed seeing the people. One day I accidentally missed Zazen. I thought it was lunchtime and it was too late to go back in. So I was just, and it took me a long time to realize that. So I was just standing there at the table, you know, looking through that window that we all have of everyone in the kitchen. And everyone was just flowing around each other. I don't have an image. I don't want to say like seaweed or kelp, but that was kind of like it, just a natural flowing around, and nothing was impeding. No one was impeding anybody else. Perfectly silent. Just lovely. And that's where our food's coming from. So I really thank you. John, you astonished me with your talk yesterday, and it was so clear and so profound, and the questions were amazing too. This will be a different approach because I don't feel capable of that one right now, but. Often my approach gets me in trouble. I find ideas, I'll jot them down, but mostly I find passages in like five different books or something that I have with me. I didn't bring them all, but that seem to be speaking the truth to me at that time. So maybe that should be the title of this talk. Not really, but so then at the end, I have them all over my bed. And I got smart and started putting on index cards so that I could arrange them. And then finally at the last minute, they seem to come together. And I hope that they do. I have them numbered, so. But it's really, again, going back to mountains and waters. And each time a new opening into it. And I'm glad you're not reading it. I'm glad you all are not trying to read this. This is not a study session. It's not really a good mix, reading and sitting. And and for me today, it was much more difficult doing the reading. Than it has been before, because our focus has been more open, and then go to the closed thing, and also going into the having to mentally process was very slow, very difficult. I thought I'd never get through it, but finally it was the end. And as always, I had something put together. But it's a good idea not to even crack a book during Sesshin. But, you know, maybe if you have a special little poem or quotes that you'd like to have with you, that's nice, but not try to understand anything. That's why I relate to that do not understanding, because it can be my motto. I'm usually pretty good at do not understanding, but then it's hard to switch back, you know, the other way. So I'm not going to probably talk as long today. It seems that when I watch us, though, it seems like the way we're moving and the way we're sitting is that fundamental ease and joy. And I don't know. It might be the thing that one is not aware of, like realization, but it's you can see it in others. The Dharma Gate of Repose and Bliss is another word for Zazen. Sometimes. That's coming up. So I think we're getting this sense of non-separateness, our essential non-separateness in the big view. And starting perhaps to, just by our open awareness, see things without our preconceptions, without that whole veil. I mean, not always, but getting those glances once in a while. I saw, it's not here, but what was it, yesterday when we were doing walking meditation? He was just standing there under the plum tree, looking at the bell that kept ringing. I thought that was so cool. Because I've done that. Or just stopping and noticing something small, like, oh, there really are withered apples in that apple tree in the very center of it. Just things that, when I'm preoccupied, which I always am, I don't see. And Dogen is making such a point of this, and I think it's, to me, right now, the most relevant point that he's making is we are so conditioned, and that's not a bad thing, we need it. We have human perceptions, well, we're human, we need them, but we don't necessarily, and usually don't, wholly and deeply realize that this is my point of view, and not just as a human, but each of us. And that point of view comes through our karma, which don't ask me about, but if you talk about, I'm not talking about you did something bad and therefore it's going to be bad for you and you're going to go to hell or something, but you did something good and then you're going to be joyous the rest of time. It's more just like everything that's come up to us through our genetics, through our conditions that we live in, and through our society and sort of the way we communicate, we have to agree on something. We have to agree on concepts and so on. But this is gives us a chance just to open up and remember that there's more. And it's very real. And we move through and within both realities, the combination of those realities and our ability to see that ours isn't the only reality is it's the great matter in a sense, not to believe everything you think, as I say, not to just, not to disbelieve it either, but just to hold it, you know, because you don't really know. It's just to hold it in abeyance and see from both sides. One works within the other, and the other works within the one. That's what Dogen is trying to say, as I said in the first day about the poets. That's what Dogen is saying, and by sitting, and all he invites, reading the mountains and waters, just for looking for the different ways he says study. Study, investigate, see clearly, look into this. Can you remember others, John? There's so many. He finds a different way every time. Investigate this thoroughly. Everything is investigate this thoroughly.
Study this.
Even understand. But the, you know, as I said last time I talked, it's not the kind of understanding that you can get by making your eyes bleary reading Dogen over and over again. You need to have as your core practice in our tradition, in our way, handed down from all the ancestors, it's sitting practice, zazen. And that's the way we're asked to investigate our own views, etc., our own conditioning, and be able to say yes. And now let's open this awareness and see that there's more. Also, there's more if we look at another person. And if we see that person without projecting our ideas of what people are, and our views of, oh yes, even right now I'm having to assume certain things about you by even using myself as an example. I can't help it, because I don't know. No one can know the unique other person in that way. But we all know zazen, so that's a way we can, that's a medium of communication without words when we're sitting here. It's palpable, don't you think? Dogen talks in the Ginjo Koan about when you go forward into the world or into things and practice and advance the self, that is delusion. When all things come forward into us and practice, and practice and convey the self, not advance, into us and practice and convey the self. It could be the individual self of that apple, or it could be the self of all of us. I'll let you know when I clarify that in 100 years. But that is enlightenment. When we go forward with our own whatever's going on in our mind and project it onto whatever relationship or communication we're having, whether it's with the cup or with the Oreoke, I've projected my Oreoke pieces halfway across the table already this week, literally, by having my mind on something else. That's self-preoccupation. That's not allowing things to come forward. So again, Ginjo Koan that could be the short version and very, very complex version of a very longer, complex work by Dogen, Mountains and Waters. That's a lifetime study, and I've been studying it. I guess I can say, yikes, I can say more than half my lifetime. I still read it. Oh yeah, this is something from Mountains and Waters. He said that, Dogen said that it's like with our limitations, and I get a good visual of this, it's like looking through a bamboo tube at a corner of the sky. Some people say it's like looking at the sky and the clouds are our thoughts, but then that works too, but I like this one. It's just more limited, even. I don't know how people do that. Would it be that they're looking here and it's going up, or just holding up the tube like that? I don't know. I can just imagine looking at a, you know, hollow bamboo tube up at the sky, a little teeny piece. Or when you're using, you know, on my phone camera, it does not really have a telescopic lens, but it just, it makes things bigger in front and everything else is blurry around. But I can imagine that. My father used to be a photographer, you know, and this was in the very early 50s. And he had one of those big box cameras like this, and it had a bellows that you could look through, and it had, you know, like this, crosshairs in it. And you'd look through that, and you'd be looking down, and what you would be seeing would be right there. I thought that was pretty cool. But it's limiting, and that's important too. Sometimes we want things in close up. Some things we want to see the distance. Just know that they're both there. Don't get in the, put your thumb in the way of your selfie, you know? So, this is something from old Coben. I just got a new transcription of a new talk by Coben, not new, it was in 1978. And Kirk and Karen Gouge must have transcribed it way back when. And Ellen just recently, very recently, she just sent it to me, has made a digital version, so I think I'll be able to see it. I have it somewhere. Yeah, he's talking about the Fuku Zazenji by Dogen. How to sit. Our sitting practice, very practical. So Coben said of our practice of Zazen, this practice is not different for different people. The actual Zazen practice is not different for different people, even though everything else is. But Each of us has his or her own way of seeking truth. But when all forms drop off from you, what remains is your pure life, which you have to take care of. The most important thing is to take the best care of your life by looking after everything around you. Every practice is different, yet your individual action touches the original big purpose. And we're putting that practice into action here. Thank you. Just one more thing, and I want to hear what you have about your practice. This is from a commentary on Mountains and Rivers. The point of the sitting practice is to keep the upright posture and awareness of whatever is going on within and without our life. We are already in the mountain. Thank you. So this is not something far from us. I'm talking about things close here to us, in us, outside us. So it's not a metaphysical discussion, I hope, because I probably wouldn't be able to handle that very well right now. But tell me. Yes.
The experience of the magical connections that when you're open to whatever, like what you're talking about, how I relate to it is just getting out of the way and having all these magical moments, whether it's the fog coming over the hill or meeting someone that you have. There's no, I don't know, I'm not doing a very good job, but it's just been incredible to be talking about this and feeling like this is the place where we can open to that larger experience with our whole being without needing our egos or anything, because we offer them here on the cushion so that we can experience something immediate rather than intended, even maybe, and to have that experience from each of the people that I've met here has just been, it's been lovely. What the practice is for me.
That's lovely, Chris. Yeah, thank you. I saw you out in the garden in front of the kitchen. I thought, oh, she's cutting, you know, some herbs. But you're just pulling weeds out and making it all nice, right? Yeah, I was glad that you could get out and do that. Well, Cliff pointed out a plant up there when we took a little walk. He pointed out something that was poisonous. It's way up there, though. It wasn't in the kitchen garden. Did I call you Cliff? I think I did. John?
Cliff, yes.
John.
hook there for?
Cliff is a very old, very close friend, so it's a compliment.
I'll take that.
Yeah, he was a big part of this place.
Yeah, he is. Violet?
First, the kitchen has been the second zendo for Riau. The peace and the love that comes from that place is felt in every cell. So that's both ways. One thing that I have been experiencing these past few days very deeply and interesting is I feel that when you go into that realization of letting go, interestingly, the limits sort of drop and the space is very vast. And having this Sangha, I've been feeling it. If you're in the Zendo a little early and then everyone walks one by one, you feel lifted and supported in that space. And sort of, I don't know if it's the right word, but feeling safe in letting go. Because maybe we want all those limitations to sort of protect, I don't know what. And it's been wonderful to have the Sangha. It's sometimes scary out there in the world when you open yourself up, but to have a group that you can so easily sort of open your heart to is incredible. And yeah, I think that's been settling in me pretty strongly. So that's been my sitting experience so far. I'm very thankful.
Yes. It's true, it's not safe to open ourselves on the street corner for most of us. They talk about monks sitting on bridges, but maybe that was old-timey times before cars. It's not safe. This is, that's why you do it in a place like this. Yeah. With people like this.
So I've done a few sesshins in the past. I guess probably the most difficult days were the 7 days of my first sesshin.
Yes.
The last 2 days probably been a pretty close second.
Mm.
But it's actually not because of the sesshin. So I learned about an hour ago that my sister passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
She had gone in for a procedure on Friday to check out some problems with her breathing. She had a cardiac arrest as a result of a procedure they were doing. And she had a cardiac arrest. So they put her on life support on Saturday. And I learned on Monday that they were going to take her off life support because of her blood work. Mm. But they were going to wait because her daughter was in Hong Kong and was trying to get back before they terminated life support. So I called again today. I probably put it off for as long as I could, and they told me that they were still going to do some more tests. She's a nurse. I have two medical doctors in the family, and both of my sisters, her daughter and her son-in-law, are both physicians. So there's a lot of medical firepower available. So they were trying to do everything they could, but they were calling in some specialists, and she decided she needed to go before they started doing some more procedures. So the practice, I guess, is kind of changed for me in the last couple of days. You know, it's kind of funny, in a way, because I'm okay. And there's nothing broken except maybe my heart, and emotionally, just kind of sort of taking moment to moment, but I think the problem, if it's a problem, I'm not sure if it's a problem. I think I have more questions now than I have answers, but it's like, I don't know how, I guess I've never dealt with grief in this way before. It can't be uncommon, but it's a new experience for me. I guess what the Zazen practice, I'm looking at it from the perspective of the Zazen practice, and there's some interesting things that are happening, and I want to share them. I don't have any solutions, but I just want to share them. So I remember during that first session, I don't know, it was over at Zen Center, and with the Rohatsu session, and they announced at night that they were going to have a memorial service for Suzuki Roshi. And for some reason, there was this wave of emotion that came over me. The only word I can think of is that it was gratitude. Gratitude for all the people who had put that temple together, who had started the practice, and who allowed me to come and sit. And if I look at what happens now, for some reason, it feels very much like that same feeling. When that washes over me, it was the same feeling that I had of gratitude. And I kind of wonder how the grief and the gratitude can have that same feeling. And I guess what happens is that it makes me less afraid of the feeling of the grief over the loss of my sister, because I don't know if it's really grief. I'm trying to figure that out now. And the other thing I sort of have been looking at is that those feelings come up when I'm thinking about people's reactions when they hear about her passing. And I know those are thoughts, but when the thoughts stop, it's when that feeling just kind of comes over me. And I wonder if they're coming, again, these are all questions. They've got lots of questions. I wonder if that feeling that comes up is coming from the same place that the thoughts are. Are the feelings coming up from from that space that I don't have words to describe, is it coming from that, from another world, that other multiverse? The thoughts I can sort of track back, but that feeling is what it's just interesting. And it feels like Zazen gives me a place to kind of work through it. I the last person I talked to this afternoon was my sister, who's a physician, and she said that, you know, there's nothing you could have done. I mean, when she went to cardiac arrest, she was she's pretty much beyond help, and that happened on Saturday. She never recovered consciousness. So there wasn't anything I could do. So the decision in terms of kind of being there to support her were just sort of more theoretical than anything. But she also said something, again, it's another one of those questions. She said, well, you know, the best place you could be is in a place where you can find solitude. And I listened to that and I kind of smiled inside, because this is not a solitude place in a sense. Even when I don't have these kinds of things going on, I cry more at sesshins than I cry anyplace else, except maybe the sad movies. There's something about opening up that makes I cry. And I don't know why. And in a way, it makes the grief. I don't know. Maybe it makes the grief more intense. I don't know. It's something I'm working through right now, and I'm really appreciative of just the space and the opportunity to just kind of just be here. So I really didn't want to be a downer for people. I'm doing okay. I'm just sniffling on my Zafu, but I'm okay. I feel a little fragile, but other than that, I should shut up.
No.
Thank you for listening.
I think, you took us all to that place that we know, and that's sort of bitter. To me, it's like bittersweet, because it's love and pain, but it's open. That's how I feel it. Like, usually we don't open ourselves up to pain. I speak for myself. I try to avoid it, you know. But when something like that happens, your heart breaks, and it's open. And there is something you all know what I'm saying. So I'm glad you shared that. And I'm glad that you're here, and it's real.
Exquisite experience of the loss and the presence, and the loss and the presence of someone we hold so dear. Exquisite can be really painful, but it's beyond joy, but it's through joy, because I don't know. I just, when my father passed, he came to me after he passed, which sounds weird, but his message to me was, I live on in you living what I loved. And that was like the breakthrough place. He broke through this mortal coil.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the loss of being able to see them every day, but there's a presence that you hold in your heart, and that exquisite, tender place we get to experience through that loss, because they're closer to us somehow by being farther away. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Sister, the greatest gift of her life. She passed when you were in Zazen. There's no separation between you and her sister. I would like to make a comment to you, Wesley, about grief. I don't expect you to twist around. I had my first tutorial in grief earlier this year, and I learned that it is not an affectation. It is not a mood that you decide to have. It's not something you roll out of bed with if you get up on the wrong side. It is you. And at the same time, it's almost like a beast because it functions in a way that feels independent of you. And I would say, don't look for it. Don't cultivate it. Be patient, child. It's coming. I found that the best thing that anyone ever said to me throughout the course of my experience was simply, "I'm sorry for your loss." I learned that if I'm ever in that position, that's what I will say to people from now on. My comments are apropos of nothing, but you brought them back to the mind, so I thought I would share my sense of it. The main thing is, it's real. And don't let anyone tell you that you're going to be okay in 6 weeks. It'll take the time it takes. It tends to come in waves. You never know what will trigger it. For me, it was as soon as I started telling someone about what had happened. But there are any number of things, memories, smells. Beware those old family photo albums.
Mm-hmm.
And there will always be a small compartment where you can, will be able to feel it, but it will abate in its own time. And I'm sorry for your loss.
Shall we do the vows?
Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.